Hello, Brodies and Brodettes of the world. My name is Caleb Walgren, and you're listening to Season 5, Episode 18 of Brody Sports Talk. That's right, my name is Caleb Walgren. I'll say it again, because I am the Packer owner of this podcast, the founder of Brody Sports Talk, and I am joined, of course, by a fine gentleman who likes all sorts of fine things, like fine weather, fine china, and fine quarterbacks, and that is Captain Orange, Derek Rusnick. How are you doing today?
It's finding quarterbacks, because we're just going to go through all of them that we can find, you know, three at a time and see what happens. I'm doing well. I hope everyone out there in listening land is having a great day. Just remember that you deserve a virtual high five, and here it comes. Oh, yeah, so good. So let's get on.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and get it started with our Brody spotlights. This is where Derek and I both kind of take a look at something that's standing out to us in the world of sports that we wanted to go ahead and put a spotlight on. And sometimes it's also a positive spotlight, could be a negative spotlight. And we also pick one from sports as a whole that just kind of needs a little bit more attention from us. So Derek, what is your spotlight this week?
Okay, so for our folks who have listened to this podcast for all of last season, you know, I jumped on the San Francisco 49ers bandwagon last year. They got Christian McCaffrey. I love their quarterback situation when they were healthy. I just like, okay, they're going to run the ball. They've got this really cool, really great defense. You know, this is the kind of style that I like. And so after week one of the NFL season, I'm worried. I'm worried that my bandwagon from last year has turned into a crush. So I watched the 49er game this weekend, and I'm telling you what, how can you turn the last pick of the draft into a really good quarterback, like a guy who's just throwing darts, knows the playbook, runs the plays very well, knows how to play the quarterback position, and, you know, 31 other teams passed on this guy like five or six times. I am just blown away. And then they have Christian McCaffrey, who spin move into the open field. It's great. Bosa came back last on week one, ended his contract holdout thing, and looked really good. He's just going to get better as they go. With a down season last year and a down week one with the Broncos, I'm worried that the 49ers could be moving up in my list, in my heart. And I don't know what to do with it. I'm going to have to like sit down and meditate and kind of talk with the family about what this could mean, having crushes on other teams. But what I will say is the 49ers could be the creme of the NFC right now. So I know everyone out there in listening land is saying, oh, well, the Cowboys just absolutely destroyed the Giants 40-0. Okay, yeah, they have a really good defense, but I'll wait on their offense sooner or later. You know, the Eagles beat the Patriots. Yeah, they went to the Super Bowl last year, and they beat the Niners in the NFC Championship game. Real great job. You know, we'll see what happens on, you know, this coming Thursday night. I just think that there is a complete team in the 49ers, and this is way too early. I mean, understand, this is after week one. I think the Niners are a really great team, and I really think that we are going to see a huge upswing with the Niners if they stay healthy. That is only if they can keep guys healthy on the quarterback position. I think they could definitely move toward a superb owl, and Brock Purdy is certainly not a fluke.
Absolutely. I think that we are far from calling Mr. Irrelevant, who is soon going to just keep that nickname as a badge of honor, as, you know, like, he's never going to be considered a fluke. He's been a legend since he's taken the field in the NFL. Now, one thing, I'm going to switch it up, Derek. I love where you're coming from. You're talking about your bandwagon, possibly a crush. You're talking with your feelings, with your emotions. And one thing that I just have to talk about is the NFL plays a lot of games on turf. There's a lot of bad fields in the NFL that are grass. There's a lot of bad fields that are turf. But let's face it, sport fields should be done on natural grass. It isn't the right way. If we can say there is one right way to do it, it generates less injuries. One big thing that happened last year, Derek, when Matt Rhule came to Nebraska, is he ripped out all of the practice fields that Nebraska was currently using because they were turf and switched them over to grass immediately. We're talking about this on a college. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say college football doesn't make money, because we know it does. But if that level of money is able to be done, like, point blank from a whim from a new head coach at a college, how is this not being done at the NFL level? I'm not going to sit here and say that the injury early on Monday night for Aaron Rodgers, where he ruptured his Achilles, was strictly a turf issue. No, he's 39. He's had a lot of wear and tear, and the pass rush was getting to him crazy fast. Not quite as fast as, you know, the Cowboys getting to the Giants quarterback. Maybe we'll talk about that later. But in general, it was a turf that was being played on back-to-back days, and it just was not good. It was not clean. And sometimes it's better to just have grass. It is better for the players. And at some point, if the NFL, which has in the past, I'm going to say 15 years, Derek, you can correct me if my time frames are wrong, has gotten so much more into this player safety narrative as far as trying to avoid concussions, it also needs to get there in terms of ACLs, Achilles, these lower body injuries that we just see happening more often on turf. Any thoughts or comments before we go to the broader take here on the wide world of sports?
Yeah, I'll take you one further. Like, we're just some guys from Oklahoma, and we love to watch football. There, most of the players that are vocal about playing surfaces are saying, hey, get this fake stuff out of here. We need grass. You know, we have the technology to do it nowadays. Let's get grass in there, because we're seeing, you know, not just the injury of, I mean, hopefully we won't see the last of them, but you know, one of the better quarterbacks that have ever played the game. But you're also getting a lot more like burns, and like when you're sliding down or when you're getting tackled, and not just the stuff that's like, oh, debilitating. But like the aches and pains that go through an NFL season, there just seems to be a lot more of those minor injuries that take away from the game. So the players are saying, let's play on real grass. And I'm going to trust the guys who know how to play the game over my own opinion.
So I do have to throw this out there. I think I forgot to mention it, but a lot of these stadiums are going to replace their fields with grass for the 2026 FIFA World Cup because they want to be included in that entry. Well, if they're going to be able to do that, even at spaces like Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Derek, that has the retractable roof, like if you're going to be able to put grass in there for a summer, how can you not put it in there for a football season? Like, it may be tough to maintain, but grass is always tough to maintain. Get over it. That's why you have a field crew. That's why you pay them. So I just think it's something that is going to keep being a talking point until it happens. So let's hope that it happens sooner rather than later, because I'm starting to beat the drum, Derek, and I'm pretty sure this is not the first time I've mentioned this on the podcast, and I'm pretty sure it's unfortunately not going to be the last yet.
Yeah, probably not, and we're probably going to see more injuries before something like that happens.
Last but not least, not necessarily something that I love to discuss here, but there, in the wild world of sports, there was an accusation made against Mel Tucker, the Michigan State football head coach, last December. And it was only because it came out in the USA Today article on Sunday that he has now been suspended without pay. Michigan State, I just don't know how they can continue to do this athletically at this point. For those of you who may or may not remember, because what Mel Tucker has been accused of is of a sexual harassment claim against Brenda Tucker, or not Brenda, Brenda Tracy, my bad, who is an advocate for people to get permission and, you know, have consent. Obviously, I'm with Miss Tracy on that. I want people to treat people with respect and have dignity towards one another. Treat people like people. And she filed this allegation against him in December, and the school just kept trying to get it thrown out. And now that they kind of were caught, they were like, okay, well, we'll go ahead and suspend him because we should have. We're talking about the school that Larry Nassar was at for several decades. Like, we're talking about a school that has a history of messing this stuff up. I hate saying it, Derek, because it's the conference that my team is in, but between the Big Ten schools like Penn State and Michigan State, there's got to be a way for conferences where so much money is being generated for them to be able to come down and say, you mishandled this, you're losing some of your money. Point blank, period. You're losing your money. You're getting kicked out of the conference. I don't care what it has to be, but Michigan State cannot keep messing this stuff up. Like, even if they just say, hey, there's an investigation, where, like, it should not have come out in a national article 9 months after they were given a Title IX lawsuit against him. What are you doing, Michigan State? Do better. Derek, I know normally I kind of rant on these things, and I feel like even if we don't know all the details or who was in the right or the wrong, we may not get all of that. I know that there's a hearing next month during Michigan State's bye week, which is very convenient for Mel Tucker. But do you have anything you want to add, or do you just want to kind of drop that one and move on?
You know, I have something, and I have kind of an opposite take on it. So all that has happened at Michigan State, I don't have opinions on that until there's actual, like, more legal documents that have come out, blah, blah, blah. But this week we saw a picture come out after the OU, the University of Oklahoma football game, of a former Baylor coach by the name of Art Briles. When he was at Baylor, there was some, there was a lot of stuff going on. If you want to know about that stuff, you can Google it. If you don't already know about it, I'm not going to go into it. But all the said, this guy is incredibly not welcomed in the football community anymore. Well, he just happens to be the father-in-law to the offensive coordinator at the University of Oklahoma. From what I have read in the reporting, there has been ground rules set about Art Briles and Jeff Lebby, who's the offensive coordinator right now. Like, there's ground rules of not bringing him onto campus and not, and he just can't be around the program because it doesn't look good for the university. They don't want to put up with that or you know, any kind of scandal therein. So a picture comes out. Art Briles is in OU gear on the field after the game, and based upon what the reactions were, the athletic director nor the head coach knew that Art Briles was going to be at the on the field or in OU gear. And so as soon as it came out, they handled the situation that same night. Jeff Lebby at his press conference on Monday, had a prepared statement, all that kind of stuff. It's been resolved and it won't happen, should not happen in the future. For whatever you want to take it, if it's overreaction, just because a guy is on the field in OU gear, what the excuse was, whether he was, he is the grandfather to Jeff Lebby's kids, and it's a grandpa moment. I think OU handled this correctly. Like in this moment, hey, we can't have this in our program. Our program cannot be tied to this guy in any way beyond, hey, we hired a guy who just happens to be his son-in-law, but had no connection to his time at Baylor. We have to see something very similar when it comes to Michigan State. These are huge powerhouse, money-making schools, and you have to find where you stand. And I'm very proud. Like I'm an Oklahoma State alum, and usually I would hate what OU does, but I'm very proud of OU in this moment of coming out and saying, hey, this has to be fixed. We cannot allow any impropriety in this program. And we're just kind of seeing the opposite when it comes to Michigan State. I'm going to leave it at that of just saying Michigan State needs to get their ducks in a row very quickly.
Yeah, I think this is just one of those things where you handle your business the right way. I hear what you're saying. I would say Oklahoma handled their business the right way. Very relevant example, Derek. I like where you're coming from. And I'm going to misrepresent this probably a little bit, but they did something similar last offseason. I believe when they ended up firing, was it their quarterback coach or someone with the program, because he was using improper language in front of students. I remember it happened like close to the season, and it probably contributed to them having a worse season than they would have had otherwise.
A long, long, very, very long time offensive. He was offensive coordinator at some point. He was quarterback coach and, offensive coach of some sort, has been there since, I believe, 2000, in that range. I know he was there when Bob Stoops was coaching, and I think he's been around that program ever since and has taken on various roles. It happened. One day, basically,
exactly.
you wake up one day and it's like, hey, this guy is no longer with the program. We appreciate all the time. You give him the platitudes and all that kind of stuff. But and then when the evidence came out, you're like, OK, well, that might have been, in some people's opinions, an overreaction from what he said. But you have to take this stuff seriously. I mean, you really do. Because any form, like any kind of reports or any kind of impropriety can lead. I mean, you have to make sure that your program is not the one doing that, not just for the sake of your reputation, not just for the sake of money, but for the sake of people. Like, if there is something happening on your campus, that is affecting other students, you have to take it seriously. And we've seen some schools not take it seriously in several aspects. And so in this case, we're going to have to see more stuff come out. The stuff that I've seen has not been great. Let's put it that way.
I think that's fair. And we'll go ahead and transition. Derek, I'm going to switch it up. I'm going to go first on my goat of the week here,
okay,
because I want to go from where we were to a much happier moment. And that is, I want to highlight Xavier Gibson, who I am calling the hero of New York. He went out this past week and he's someone that probably most of you didn't know or hadn't heard of much unless you were watching Hard Knocks. And he was the one who went with the walk-off punt return touchdown for the Jets, 22-16 upset win over the Buffalo Bills. It was a beautiful moment. He gets there. He kind of drops the ball, waves hi or bye to everyone, depending on how you're feeling about it. It was the end zone. It wasn't necessarily like the Bills sideline, but it was a moment on a day where it just felt like it needed to happen for that stadium, for New York fans, for anything. The Giants had just gotten pummeled there the night before. They had a rough injury, like I mentioned, to Aaron Rodgers early in the game. They were down often. And then Xavier Gibson, quick whoop, 65-yard punt return touchdown. Game over, walk off, goodbye. Not quite the miracle in the Meadowlands, but definitely a very fun moment in and of itself. Derek, any thoughts about Xavier Gibson, or do you want to just go to your goat of the week? And you mean goat as in a negative goat.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love Xavier Gibson's story. Like, when your quarterback goes down on the fourth play of the season, you expect to lose that game, especially if you're playing the Buffalo Bills, which are arguably the third best team in the AFC most years, and arguably a top five team in the entire NFL. Like, they have high expectations. So if you're expecting a non-Aaron Rodgers team, you're expecting, okay, well, this is going to be a loss. I know that I didn't last past halftime because games are long and I like my sleep. But yeah, and then you wake up today and that is all over everything. Like, they were tied up and they punt, and you know, every time, you know, every yard that he gets, like, okay, they're just a little bit closer to a field goal, and then he breaks past and it's a touchdown. They win the game. They walk it off. It's absolutely amazing. It's such a great story.
Absolutely. Yes. The fact that he came from the WAC, Stephen F. Austin Lumberjacks, and I saw that, I was double checking, he's a two-time offensive player of the year in that conference the last 2 years, and then he just has this moment where it's like, hello, NFL, I am here. And it was beautiful.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of different guys do that with punt returns the last few years with various teams. So it's always good to see, like, guys really step up and step out. I want to talk about a guy who stepped into something yesterday. So couple of days ago, probably about a week when this podcast comes out, Joe Burrow signed the largest contract in the history of the NFL, became the richest contract. And so right before week one, you're like, okay, the dude's gotten paid. Cool. He's at the quarterback market. Okay, cool. And this guy is, you know, perennially in the MVP conversation. Like, is he going to win it? You know, is he going to put up the most yards? And then he goes in at week one and goes 14 for 31 for 82 passing yards. And then, you know, because he wasn't doing anything, frankly, he was benched. So money doesn't buy you points in the NFL. You can go out there and you can have stinkers, and that happens. Peyton Manning had stinkers, Tom Brady had stinkers, and you walk away from it. Ugh, that stinks. But normally those are week 8 and 9 and 10 in the NFL where you're like looking forward to your bye week, or you know, you have a couple of rough games, something like that, where it's in the doldrums of the middle of the season. Oh, I put a stinker. Okay, you know, no one's really going to care about it. This is week one. You should be prepared on week one. And so you need to go back to the drawing board and you need to find out how to manufacture yards, how to manufacture touchdowns, field goals, you know, points in an NFL game. The game was only 24-3. So yeah, the Bengals only put up 3 points and that's bad. But 24 points, it wasn't a 40-0 drumming like other teams had this week. It was, you could have got back into this game at any point. I'm going to say, I'm going to have fingers crossed, and I'm going to go with bated breath and say that Joe Burrow is playing a little bit hurt. He had a hamstring thing like about a month or so ago, and he really never got over it. Calf strain, I'm sorry. So he suffered a calf injury July 27th. It kept him out of practice until August 30. So, you know, around a month or so, and really didn't get a chance to throw the ball. I am going to give you this week one stinker, Joe Burrow. But that being said, next week, you have to show up. I don't have any skin in the game. That being said, the magnifying glass is just going to get hotter under that sun, and you're going to be the ant. That spotlight does not go away when you sign for that much money.
Well, Derek, I think if you're okay with it, I'm going to springboard with this into my NFL stock watch with what I'm buying. Because I feel like it does go hand in hand. And my point is just that preseason play has an impact. Burrow did have that calf strain. He didn't play in the preseason. He missed a lot of camp. And then when you see that he went 0-for-8 targeting T. Higgins on Sunday, you go, well, is this a Burrow issue, a Higgins issue, or just a team issue? It was probably a team issue. You're not going to sit here and tell Joe Burrow when he says that he's healthy and he's cleared by the doctors that he can't play because the Bengals don't have backup quarterbacks. They pretty much never do. They had signed one this past year, and then they released him in Trevor Siemian. So, you know what? We'll see what the Bengals decide to do there in the future. But in general, look at the teams that went out and played harder in the preseason, played their guys. You're seeing consistently over and over that at least week one, the rust is not there. They're ready to go. They're ready to go out and make a difference. And the players who aren't playing as much in the preseason or getting some of those training camp reps, I feel like it does make a difference. I think that there's a little bit more rust. And I'm not saying that it's huge, but we're talking about the NFL where you only have 17-game season. One bad week can lead to you missing the playoffs. Like, who knows if the Vikings losing to the Buccaneers out of nowhere is going to cause the Vikings to miss the playoffs this year. We don't know yet. It's too early to know. But in general, preseason play has an impact. I just, like, we've gone to three games instead of four. I like that. But I also think we need to be able to say, go out there and play when you're supposed to play.
Yeah, no, I'm going to agree with you on that. I do want to kind of go over to that's kind of the off season portion, the before the season starts kind of discussion. And I want to talk about before the season starts stuff. So my buy this week is I'm buying Chris Jones, the defensive tackle for the Chiefs, as after week one, I want to say 36 to 48 hours after that game, they said, hey, Mr. Jones, we're going to come together. We're going to get this deal done. We want you on the field because the Chiefs lost to the Lions on Thursday Night Football. And Chris Jones really could have made an impact. It was a pretty close game, a pretty tight game for most of it. And when you lose by 1 point toward the end of the game, like any kind of defensive stop matters. And so he didn't really get anything out of the ordinary. He got a year deal. He'll get to be in free agency next year and test his market. And that's great. You know, like, good for you. You get a little bit of a bump, but it really didn't, you didn't get a big jump like Bosa, or you didn't get a big contract like Burrow with many more years. So I'm glad that they've come together, but I'm also glad that Travis Kelce is coming back for the Chiefs. So I am buying not just Chris Jones, but I'm also buying Kelce. I'm also buying everybody coming back to who their major power players are coming back to. Let's week one's week one. Let's go win the rest of the games and do our very best to do that. I will tell you this. I bet there is plenty of catching drills done by the wide receivers on the Chiefs. If they drop a ball the rest of the year, we may not hear from them again, because I think Andy Reid's just going to put a foot in a behind and get them out of Kansas City. Like, Patrick Mahomes can throw you the ball. He cannot catch the ball for you. And this is the NFL. You're not going to have perfectly thrown balls, but Patrick Mahomes is certainly going to throw you catchable balls, catchable NFL-level balls. So if they catch a couple of those, I think we're looking at a close Chiefs win, and we're talking about, oh, well, you know, they pulled it out. The Lions looked good. You know, we thought the Lions were going to be good this year. They just barely lost to the Chiefs. Now we're talking about the Lions being, you know, the second best team in the North, and, you know, we're worried about the Chiefs. So I'm glad everyone's coming back. I'm buying the new old guard coming into the Chiefs, as I cannot wait to see what week two holds.
Well, one thing we know for sure, Derek, is that you definitely don't buy the current AFC West standings. Why don't I let you go ahead and get to what you're going to sell? Because I feel like that will wrap that up fairly well.
Yeah, so if I am going to buy the Chiefs, I am selling the Broncos having this mentality once again. If we could just score 19 points a game with our offense, we would be 12-2. That was after week 15 of last year's season. If the Broncos under Nate Hackett could just score 19 points a game, they would have won 12 different games. They lost so many close games last year, and they lost another one in week one where it was a 17-16 game. So if you're kicking a field goal at some point, you know, we're making a 19-17 game. I don't know exactly what, in the grand scheme of things, I don't know what you do. I think Wilson had a decent game. He had two touchdowns. He had, you know, a good amount of yards. On the other hand, Jimmy Garoppolo, just wherever he goes, is just a winner. He was in New England, won some games there while Tom Brady went down. You know, his injury season, goes to San Francisco. Well, you know how much I love San Francisco and Kyle Shanahan, all the Shanahans, frankly. And then he goes to Las Vegas, and you're like, okay, well, you know, it's going to take a step back. Nope, goes 200 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. You know, good little, you know, marches his team down the field for a win, and it just bothers me. So, I want to sell this mindset of the Broncos are going to have to win with defense. You have Sean Payton. You have a brand new head coach, a brand new offensive coordinator type. You know, you're going to focus on that. The defense shows up. You have some great players there. You have Patrick Surtain too, the second. And you've got to go out here and show that you can put up some points. with Russell Wilson. I don't think anybody in the NFL right now enjoys having a Wilson as their quarterback.
I will say, Sean Payton, maybe when you handpick a quarterback to, or a kicker to come in, have him not miss an extra point in a field goal in his debut matchup, that'd be great. So I'm not trying to rub salt in the wound, Derek. I'm just kind of like,
dude,
let's not do these things, people. So I let Derek get his buy, his sell in. I'm going to go ahead and give something that I'm selling, and that is that I am going to go ahead and sell some of my stock as I am backing up from the Buffalo Bills. It has come to my attention that Josh Allen is a gunslinger, and he has gunslingeriness. Did you know that, Derek? Are you aware of Josh Allen's gunslingeriness?
I have talked to Josh Allen, and I have heard he's a gunslinger. So I think I have been made aware.
Okay. I think Jordan Whitehead is also aware of this, as he intercepted Josh Allen 3 times during the contest on Monday Night Football. Josh Allen also lost a fumble, recovered a different fumble, basically almost had 5 turnovers in the game, but he did actually have 4. In a game in which Aaron Rodgers went out early, this felt like it should have been the Bills to take and run away with, but it was the Bills to take and completely mishandle. Part of that is their defense played really well, but Josh Allen looked a little bit shaky. Tyler Bass kicking one through the upright, not quite through the upright, off of the upright and through the other upright to tie the game was a little bit messy. Part of me wonders if Brian Daboll was secretly like the Josh Allen whisperer, and now that he's in the Giants, we just don't see the same Josh Allen anymore. But it seems like the further that he's getting removed, the less that he is a MVP player and the more he is a wild, wild quarterback that you don't know what to expect from. I love the guy. He always seems to be smiling. He is on the Madden cover, so I'm not going to say that this is a Madden curse by any means, but I love that he goes out. He volunteers at like children's hospitals. He's a great dude. I just want him to not throw bad passes and give the Bills more of a chance, because from what I saw, the Jets winning, the Dolphins winning a tough one in LA, the Patriots putting up a huge fight in New England, the AFC East is going to just be tough. And you already lost one against the Jets that maybe I thought you would lose when Rodgers was playing, but you shouldn't have lost to Zach Wilson. Maybe this is going to be, Derek, a case of like the 2005 Bears, where it's a very elite defense. Xavier Gibson is that Devin Hester-esque returner, and you just hope that Zach Wilson, a.k.a. Rex Grossman, doesn't make too many mistakes. Now that I'm making references to 18 years ago football, I will stop talking and let Derek get into our Thursday night preview.
Ooh.
Unless you got something you want to say.
That is, you went way back in the archives there. I'll agree with you. I like Josh Allen a lot. I like his play style. I like what he does. I like his build. I think this dude is a football player. On the other hand, I think that he is being asked to do too much on a team. People are out here looking at Patrick Mahomes, and they're looking at Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, and they're saying, okay, you cannot win a Super Bowl without having a MVP level quarterback. You have, the star of your team has to be your quarterback. You know, frankly, that's great, and that's probably true in today's NFL. But Josh Allen, I think, is being asked to do a lot. He throws the ball, he runs the ball, he has to clean up the stadium afterwards. He has to take everybody home. He's a designated driver. I think with, you know, I like Dalton Kincaid that they picked up. He had a couple of catches last night. Maybe this year, by the middle part of this year, we'll see a little bit more of a relaxed Bills offense. And maybe with you backing up from the Bills a little bit, Josh Allen can back away from the stress level of having to do everything on the team. Maybe that'll help.
Maybe. We'll have to see.
So let's move over to the Thursday night football preview. This week we have a great one of up-and-coming teams that, you know, let's see if they are true to their of who they were last year. So we have the Vikings at the Eagles. Of course, the Eagles went to the Super Bowl last year and had a really great game. And the Vikings, I think, are definitely on the upward trend with, weirdly enough, Kirk Cousins as their quarterback. So we always like to look at matchups that we are watching, you know, the game within the game. So I'm going to talk about A.J. Brown, the receiver, versus the Vikings secondary. So if you are looking at the general stats of A.J. Brown, last year he averaged around 88 yards a game and 88 receiving yards per game last season. And for this game, he is supposed to average. He's supposed to receive 102. Is what you know, prop bets and the people who are smarter than me say. Like, yeah, we are expecting him to have 102 yards in this game, which means that he's probably going to, you know, have a couple of big catches. And so in order for the Vikings to win this game, I think you have to stop the big chunk plays that that come with a big passing game. We all know the Eagles are going to get the run game. They're going to go, you know, they have Jalen Hurts and they have a stable of running backs and they have Kelce and they have Lane Johnson. Like, you have the line. Some of my favorite people are linemen and they're linemen for the Eagles. But so you know that they're going to be able to run the ball and it's going to control the clock and that's going to eat up some time. But what you have to worry about is you get the play action and then there's this big chunk play of 35 yards. And you're all of a sudden, man, we were doing so well. We were keeping them at 4 or 5 yards on runs. We were stopping some things, getting them in the backfield. And that's how you get off the field. And then all of a sudden, they're on the other side of the 50 because they had a really big 35-yard receiving or catch and run or something like that. And you're just like, oh, man. Now the field is flipped, and now we're going to have to work even harder. So this game, I am watching how that secondary, which didn't do great last year, hopefully will be better this year, handles A.J. Brown and the receivers for the Eagles and allowing them to, you know, you're going to have your catches, as the NFL does, but not allowing big 35-yard plays and controlling the game a little bit that way.
Well, Derek, I like where you're coming from. I think that it is a huge difference. I think A.J. Brown is a beast, and he's going to get his yards and his catches against almost any team. And it's going to be interesting to see how Minnesota tries to slow him down. Clearly, new defensive coordinator Brian Flores there. I think that they're hoping that the pass rush gets there first, but like you said, the Eagles, it's the offensive line. Good luck. Like, that line is solid. I think you said the last time Lane Johnson gave up a sack was when the first Star Wars came out or something like that. I don't
like. Yeah, no, it was, I believe there was a one at the beginning of the year. So 2000 and 2-0, and then a one and like a probably a nine. It was a couple years.
It was a while ago.
Yeah. A while back.
So I'm looking at that pass rush, but I'm looking at it from the other side. The Eagles pass rush is fierce. It's dynamic. The Eagles like to play bully ball at the lines, and it's part of what makes them a team that we both kind of really appreciate. They're built from the lines out to the outside, and yet they still have a lot of talent at those positions. If you're looking at the Eagles defensive line, you have Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Jordan Davis, Josh Sweat, and then you can bring off the edge people like Hassan Reddick, Nolan Smith, bringing in like Derek Barnett, a former first round pick off the bench, Jalen Carter, your new first round pick off the bench. You can load up and send people at this Vikings offensive line all day. So much. It is ridiculous. And it's not the best part of the Vikings team. Kirk Cousins is going to be under some pressure a lot, I think, in this game. You know, obviously he's going to want to get it out to Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, KJ Osborne, TJ Hawkinson. But he had two fumbles against Tampa, who also has a good pass rush typically. He threw a pick. We all know that if you get the ball to Darius Slay or some of the people in the Eagles secondary, they're going to try to take it to the house. I need to see Kirk Cousins try to do something that I feel like he never does, which is show up in primetime, be the best person on the field for the Vikings, and find ways to get the ball out of his hands to mitigate that pass rush. I just don't see it happening. I'll go out on a limb already and say that the Eagles take this one. Maybe that's not a limb at all. Derek, I think it is about that time for high fives and handshakes, my friend.
Okay, let's go. Let's take a look back. Replay what happened last week in our Brody Bets. If you have not heard our segment before, for Brody Bets, we at Brody Sports Talk do not gamble. We live in the state of Oklahoma where it is not legal to bet on sports games. And even if it was, we wouldn't do it. Our wives would kill us. And we like to do the podcast every week. Can't do that if we're dead. If not, I would just have to boo all the time or rattle chains. I don't know. I'm getting off on a tangent. So instead of winning any money or anything like that, we give out high fives and handshakes as a tip of the hat to my co-host who only had one loss last week. So he did not hit his Nebraska pick, which is he had Nebraska plus 3.5 versus Colorado. I don't think anyone saw Colorado coming this year. I mean, there was a lot of hype, but after the TCU game, I was expecting them to come back down to earth. They did not. And that was a tough one for his Cornhuskers. But on the other side, he won with the Packers. By the way, Jordan Love looks awesome. Maybe you have a back-to-back-to-back Hall of Fame quarterbacks in Green Bay. Good job as an owner. He hit his underdog with Jets plus 2.5. Jets won, so the underdog won. And his wild card, which was such a wild card. So he had the Dolphins and the Chargers over 51. Well, they went over 51. They had 70 points between them. On the other hand, there's a reason why I wasn't here last week. I want to say I lost power in my house. What actually happened was I'm embarrassed by all of my picks. I only won one of my five, as I had Oklahoma State and Arizona State over 53. It was a 27-15. And so only 42 points were scored in that game. I did not win that over. My Broncos were minus 3.5. Raiders won that one, so did not get that one. My favorite was Seattle -5.5. The Rams won that one, and so lost that. And then my underdog, Tulane, +7. Ole Miss, 37, Tulane, 20. So I lost by 17 on that one. The easiest bet I have, and probably the easiest bet I'll have the entire year, was my wild card. Iowa versus Iowa State, under 36.5. Easy money there, as Iowa scored 20 points. Iowa State scored 13 for a grand total of 33. I could have had a whole another field goal and still won that. And I really do think that that Iowa coach is going to get fired because he can't get to 25 points a game. It's very sad. I do want to call out your tie that you had last week, Caleb, on your favorite. You had Utah -7 at the Baylor Bears, Sikkim Bears. Utah 20, Baylor 13 at exactly 7 points. You get the push, and a really good job on that one.
Yeah, it was a bit of an interesting week. I will say that I think Jordan Love showed up and played well. I was very nervous about the Jets, given how things got started. I really liked a lot of your picks, but clearly the winner was the Kittle-Purdy rivalry game in Iowa-Iowa State, where you took the under and you were right. I just want to know if George Kittle like made Brock Purdy wear his Hawkeyes jersey, or like what kind of happened from that.
Can I go on just a slight tangent?
Oh, of course.
So the NFL week one has shown me that Matt Campbell will never get a job in the NFL. So you're telling me that he had Brock Purdy and Breece Hall in the same backfield, and he couldn't even win a Big 12 championship. Breece Hall is amazing in the NFL. Maybe he needed better coaching. Brock Purdy, now we see. Okay, he got drafted last pick in the draft, blah, blah, blah. But he is a really good quarterback in the NFL. You are telling me that you had them for a couple of years and you couldn't do anything with them. Matt Campbell, shame, shame on you.
Fair point. Instead of looking back at our bets last week, you want to go ahead and take us into what we have going into this week, Derek?
Yeah, so let's talk about our teams that we love. My Orange Power pick for the Oklahoma State Cowboys, we have -7 versus South Alabama. The over-under is 47.5. After last week, I don't know about points scored in this game because I like Nardo's defense. He's our new defensive coordinator. And so, you know, it could be a really low scoring game like it was last time for the other offense. So I'm going to go Oklahoma State -7. I think they're going to beat them by a touchdown or more. I think that line's actually a little low from what I was expecting. So Oklahoma State -7. Let's go over to your freshly husked corn, your Corn Huskers. They are going up against Northern Illinois. What's going on with them this week, Caleb?
So it is Matt Rhule's home debut after two consecutive rough road outings at Minnesota and then at Colorado. Here's hoping that things get cleaned up against a Northern Illinois team that did upset Scott Frost just a couple of years ago. We are an 11-point favorite. The over-under is 42.5. One thing I've seen from Nebraska this year is that they've just turned the ball over too much for my liking. I hope that they clean it up. I hope that they prove me wrong. But I've taken them to cover back-to-back weeks, and that did not go well. Give me Northern Illinois to cover the 11, as I think that this stays as a close game because Jeff Sims possibly throws a pick or fumbles it just one time too many.
What was the stat that I saw this week that the Nebraska quarterback had the most interceptions but anyone in the first 2 weeks. But the Nebraska defense had the most sacks of any team in so far.
Sounds believable. We were killing it on defense the last 2 weeks, but Sims had at least 3 turnovers week one and another 3 week two. So it was rough. I didn't see the exact stat, but it was rough.
Yeah, it's definitely like something really good on the defensive side and not quite so good on the offensive side. So let's talk about, we just talked about Jordan Love a minute ago, and how impressed we were with him week one. Let's talk about his week two. They're headed down to Hotlanta for the Dirty Birds. So Atlanta Falcons at home, the Packers are headed down there. They are a 1.5-point favorite, with the over-under being 40.5. Where are you going with this Packers pick?
I'm going to go ahead and put my cheese head on in pride and go ahead and take that -1.5. Atlanta was good on Sunday, but they were also playing Bryce Young and a very inexperienced Panthers team, and they should have won. I like what our defense is doing. I like the pressure that they were able to put on and the fact that they looked like they tackled better than I had seen them do in a long time. They're going to need to do that against Bijan Robinson. Fun times. But I will take the Packers -1.5. I think that they win it. I'll say by 4.
Ooh, that's a really good pick. Not just a field goal. We're going to go all the way to 4. If they don't have to get to 4, they just have to beat them by 2. So on the other side, Bronco Country, let's ride. So the Broncos are at home this week, and the Commanders, with their new owner, Josh Harris, is coming to town. The Broncos are favored by 3.5, and the over-under is 39. So at 39, I think that's just a little bit too low for an NFL game. I think that Sean Payton gets gets into his offensive players and said, hey, we really need to bump this up. We really need to get going. Let's run the ball more. Let's figure out how to matriculate the ball down the field. And so I'm going to go over 39 points scored in this game. I like Sam Howell, and I think that the defense for the Broncos is really good, but I think that both teams are going to score in the 20s, like a 24-21 game. And so that would certainly put us over the 39.
And that makes it to where you're that 3.5 is too close for comfort. So you don't want to touch that. So I'd like
that is correct. So I move on to my favorite this week, and I am dedicating my favorite to one of our co-hosts who is on assignment, as I am taking Tennessee going to Florida. I'm going to volunteer to take that one at -6.5 for the Tennessee Volunteers. I really like this team. I like Josh Heupel, the head coach. I want to see what their new quarterback Milton is going to do, and you know, the Florida Gators are these. This is not the Urban Meyer Florida Gators that we used to have. So there's no Tim Tebow showing up. So I have the Tennessee -6.5 over Florida as they head down to the swamp. Talk about your favorite this week, Caleb.
So I decided to stick in the NFL this week, and I went with a team that was able to get some extra rest, got home, and saw their team probably from the comfort of their homes on Sunday as they got pushed around by the Rams. And that is, I'm taking the Lions -6 against the Seahawks. I think that the Lions did play well in their opener against the Chiefs. I think they do have room for improvement. But I also think Seattle looked like they stumbled out the gate. Tyler Lockett looked a little bit banged up early, which I don't like. And if you're going to give me a team that looked like they got out-physicaled by the Rams, We're talking about the Lions. We're talking about the kneecap biters. So give me the Lions -6 at home against the Seahawks.
Really good pick there. As I looked through the games earlier, I liked that game, and I like where you're going with it. The Seahawks are a little bit weird. I want to see what they can do bouncing back from drubbing by the Rams. We all talk about dogs on this team. We're a pro dog family and pro dog podcast. So let's talk about some underdogs. Underdog to the rescue. So talk about the Ravens at Cincinnati. What do you got going on there?
So in general, the Ravens came out. I thought they played really well. Lamar Jackson to Zay Flowers looked like it was a good connection during the opening contest against the Texans. Yes, I know J.K. Dobbins is hurt. When has that not happened in the last couple of years? So the Ravens are a 3.5-point underdog against the Bengals. Joe Burrow's calf strain I don't think is going to get better overnight. Yes, I know that the Browns have typically had their number and the Bengals have had the Ravens' number. I'm just saying I think it might be within the field goal. Give me the Ravens +3.5 in Paycor Stadium. I got to get used to saying these new stadium names, Derek. As I do think that the Ravens will find a way to keep this one close. As long as Melvin Gordon doesn't fumble too much.
No promises there. We all know how Melvin Gordon does things. So earlier in the podcast, I talked very nice things about the University of Oklahoma. But my underdog this week, they are bringing the Tulsa Golden Hurricane to Norman, Oklahoma, and OU is favored by 27.5. Now, Tulsa is a Division I school. They are also in the state of Oklahoma, and they have not had some great years recently, normally because they can't keep a coach for longer than 2 years, because once they start doing a good job, some other school picks them up. So that being said, 27.5 points is a lot of points on a spread. And as I said, when we began our Brody bets a couple of weeks back, I am not going to be afraid of big spreads anymore. So give me Tulsa +27.5 over the OU Sooners as my underdog. And my final pick this week. We talked about the Cornhuskers. I'm going to go with their opponent they had last week in my wild card. I have Colorado headed up to Oregon with Bo Nix and the Ducks. And the over-under for this game is 69.5. I am taking the over. Let's just score all the points. Let's get a 64-62 game with Colorado winning that one by, I don't know, a safety or something like that, the last possible second. Just let's run it up and down the field, interceptions, whatever it takes to get there, as I have Colorado in Oregon scoring over 69.5 points altogether.
Can we let Oregon win it on a safety? I need to not let Colorado all of a sudden be the best team in college football.
Unfortunately, this is going to be a Travis Hunter blitz, and he's going to tackle Bo Nix in the end zone. Unfortunately, I don't make the rules. I just read the script.
Okay.
As everyone knows, the NFL is scripted, and so is college football.
Absolutely, which is why we're so good at all these picks. Last but not least, my wild card. I went to Duval. Oh, I'm losing my voice here. But I'm taking the Chiefs and Jaguars over 51 down there in Duval. I think that it is going to be a thrilling matchup. I think Lawrence is going to score. I think Mahomes is going to make sure Kelsey gets involved. and there's just going to be more points than they had previously expected. So add up the points. I had it over 51 hit last week. Let's have back-to-back over 51s in the wild card this week.
That is a great wild card pick. You get Kelsey coming back. And Trevor Lawrence, watch out, people. He is starting to turn into that quarterback that everyone was expecting when he was drafted by the Jaguars. This one could certainly be over 51 middle of the third quarter. I honestly think that if Chris Jones is out of shape or something like that, we could see a back and forth game pretty easily.
I mean, tell me you don't see an easy shot of a 31-27 score either way. Like, it's just something where I'm like, both teams are going to go score. Even then, that's 58. And I think that one team's going to hit 30. Like, it would be weird if they didn't. So, I'm going big down in Duval. And that's it here for this episode of Brody Sports Talk. If you like what we are bringing, please make sure you subscribe so you do not miss a single episode. And if you want to know where to subscribe, you can find that on our Linktree, linktr.ee/BrodyTalk. It has all of our links, as our link to X, which is still called Twitter, or X, call it what you want. We will accept that because we are open to different opinions. If you dislike our opinions, Twitter is where you would mention us, at BrodyTalk. Go ahead and give us a hard time on there about how bad our high fives are. Or if you think that I shouldn't back up from the Bills, or that Kirk Cousins is the best quarterback in the National Football League, and I will just tell you that you're wrong. So on behalf of my fantastic co-host, Derek, my name is Caleb Walgren. Thank you for listening, and we are signing out. Later, y'all.
Bye, guys.